Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pints and Pairings. I'm Curtis Taylor, also known as Hop Head's Head.
And I'm Jason Hendrick, the Hungry Man from Everybody's Hungry.
And we are exploring BJCP category number 14, which happens to be IPA.
Yeah, we're going through different subcategories of the number 14.
That's why today is such a great day, hashtag PNP IPA Day, because they're all just too delicious, and they all deserve their own show. Jason's trying not to damage his cuticles while he opens it.
I was worried about it splashing back up.
Oh, I see.
I was getting too excited about the IPA. I didn't want to open it aggressively and have it backfire.
Well, we have an IPA that people outside of the South Dakota, Wyoming, and North Dakota borders may not have a chance to enjoy. It's Crow Peak Brewing in Spearfish, South Dakota. This is their IPA. I don't think it has any name. It just says IPA, right?
Yeah, it just says, well, maybe pure hoppiness is the name. It says up above the logo, Pure Hoppiness, Crow Peak Brewing Company, Spearfish, South Dakota. And 6.5% by volume for a 12-ounce can.
So that's on the top side of the IPA.
You got to turn the can around, 11th hour IPA.
There it is, 11th hour. Thank you. I'm glad that we finally pulled that one out. One of the reasons why I couldn't just let IPA go with one, because English IPAs are so different from American IPAs. And already, just take one whiff of this beer, and smacked in the face with a resiny pine sort of aroma.
Yeah, most definitely. Almost like pine coney. Not just the pine, like a fresh scent cleaner. You know, we're not talking pine like on Pine Sol.
Yeah.
We're talking about the real deal up in the forest, pine cone style, and, you know, fallen leaf, dew, moisture on the ground kind of thing. I hate to say it, because you're going to make fun of me, and everybody should make fun of me, but the vision I just got in my head is from my wife's vampire series, Twilight, because they're up in that Pacific Northwest kind of region. It's always foggy, a lot of conifers, a lot of pine trees, and that just outdoor woodsy kind of smell is what I'm getting right now.
I thought you were going to say from my wife's motivational posters, in which case I'm going to say, no, that's not something. But yes, if it's Twilight, yes, I am going to make fun of you for that one. it's Pine Forest all the way. And one of the things that
it's so clean and fresh.
One of the things we've had conversations about quite a bit is how the West Coast IPA is really spreading through, for better or for worse, the whole span of the country. So there used to be a point where you could get East Coast IPAs were generally more English-centered,
yep,
you know, not quite as assertive. And then there wasn't anything in the Midwest for quite a while. And then you had the West Coast. And then the East Coast kind of picks up, and now the Midwest seems to be getting in on it too. And so that's good in the fact that I can pick up one of these an IPA wherever I'm at, a local one, because I want something that's hoppy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, it's bad on the other hand, because some of these regional differences, you know, in hindsight, I guess, are being kind of, I don't know, erased maybe. And I spent a lot of time wanting West Coast IPAs, and now that the IPAs that I'm getting from where I grew up taste like West Coast IPAs, now I'm kind of like, I wish I would have enjoyed.
And I can definitely appreciate where you're coming from. And I think the challenge is that the demand and the marketing of West Coast IPAs has been so strong that the rest of the country is conforming a little bit. They're starting to bring in that West Coast influence to their own IPAs. And I've had this conversation a couple of times with friends about IPA. You know, going back to some breweries that I have familiarity with from, not when I was growing up necessarily, because they weren't around when I was growing up, but since I've traveled back home to Indiana a few times in the past couple of years, they have IPAs that, I don't know if they're a little afraid of the West Coast style or if they want to delineate themselves separately from the West Coast style. But they're doing more of a multi-style IPA with a little less pungency of, you know, the hot profile, a little less intensity. Mm-hmm. Back Road Brewing, I believe, is the name of the place in LaPorte, Indiana. They actually delineate on their label that it's a Midwest-style IPA. So they're not trying to come in under the guise of what West Coast is doing. And I kind of like that. It's like, as we mentioned in the last episode, IPA is basically an English pale ale in its origin, and we add a stronger hop presence. What level of hop presence you introduce or what varieties of hops you want to use is totally up to you. It really leaves a blank canvas and a palette that can be manipulated in a way for your region. Maybe you're, you know, more accessible with a Chinook hop, or, you know, you don't want the citrusiness because you're in the Midwest and you want to maybe a little more malty and apple kind of fall feel to your IPA. Then you can go, you know, in a different grain bill a little bit. You can tweak that, or you can go away from the citrus style hops. There's a lot of options, and I agree with you. I think the trends are West Coast, but there are still some breweries out there trying to make their own mark in the IPA scene.
Certainly. And, you know, looking at just some specifics on IPAs, American IPAs, anywhere in like the 5.5 to 7.5% is acceptable. 7.5 is getting pretty high. And, you know, at one point it was 6.5% was the cutoff. Now, these, if you were to pick up a 5.5% IPA, or if you were served and you wanted an IPA and it came as a 5.5% IPA, you could tell the difference between the two. There isn't going to be the malt backbone to back it up. It's going to be, I would guess, decidedly one-sided hop. And those are fun for tasting and maybe training your palate on what
they're,
the flavor.
They're hard to sit and have a whole bottle by yourself.
Right.
Though.
You need to have some sort of balances. And that balance generally comes in at around 6.5%. But this one is certainly an aggressively hopped beer.
I'm getting my first dessert focus, too, and I'm really excited about this beer. One, do you have more cans? Because I like to trade something for them. And two, can you get more of it? But three, leading down the direction as it warms up a little bit, I'm getting a little bit of a gingerbread note on the nose. Mm. And even a little bit of that residual ginger spice kind of reference in the back of my throat as I finish on the back of my tongue. And so I think anything, you know, graham crackery or gingery focus in a dessert would really pull that out. It would resonate that tone a little bit in this beer, and you could do well. Because then if you put it with something a little more tart, if you've got like a graham cracker or a gingery style, gingerbready style crust or base in your recipe with something sharp and tangy like a cream or a yogurt or a custard, then it should go really nice with this beer.
Yeah, the residual sweetness in this will lend to a bunch of different desserts, kind of what you were alluding to. I like the custard idea. I think that's a great one. Something like a custard would be a way for people to experiment with IPAs too. So if you're introducing this beer to somebody who isn't necessarily an IPA fan or is afraid of the bitterness, the custard will coat your palate.
Sure.
Okay. And so then what that will end up doing then is reducing the bitterness of the IPA until the IPA can wash out. So that initial hit of bitterness is going to be diminished because your palate is already coated with the custard. Something to think about down the line. It seems like one of the most popular trends with pairing IPAs, though, is spicy foods. And I give a certain amount of props to it. I mean, if you have a dish that isn't as spicy as that you want, the hop character in IPAs and the alcohol and the carbonation can elevate that momentarily, give you a perception that it's a little hotter than what it actually is.
And when we first opened this episode, I was reluctant and bypassed it, but I was thinking along my Italian theme from the previous episode, because a good spicy pepperoni or sausage-style pizza is a no-brainer with this beer. However, like I said a couple minutes ago, I'm really this beer. I think this particular one, though, we compete too much with the spiciness. I think there's enough peppery, spicy, almost radishy, like a radish mm-hmm. note on the back, that I don't think it's the best choice to go spicy with this particular one. Not that spicy anyway.
And leading back to every episode that we talk about, you know, you want to make sure you taste these beers, because this one is more assertive than some IPAs that you're going to find. And it has a sweeter malt backbone than generally I would have expected out of just a regular IPA. I'm looking at the Great Divide website, and they've got a really nice IPA. Actually, they've got two. They've got the Titan IPA, and then they have the Hercules. The Hercules is a really great double IPA. But one of the things that they have on theirs is a suggestion for their Titan IPA is a Thai chicken curry.
Okay.
A Thai, whichever way it goes, Thai curry chicken, Thai chicken curry, whichever, because I don't know if it's... if it's a Thai chicken with curry sauce, or is it a Thai curry with chicken? I'm guessing it's the Thai curry. Anyway, but this is one of those things where it has this creamy sauce in it as well. And so that sauce is coating, and the spices are sitting there. The sauce itself helps to tamp down, I guess, the spices. You know, it kind of keeps them from just a coating, direct contact, I guess, with the spices. The IPA will help wash that away, but it also give that a sense of a momentary kind of burst of heat and spice as it comes out, as it works its way through too.
And I love these episodes. I love doing the show with you, because once we get in the groove and we're talking about the beer and the different food compatibilities, my wheels start turning. My brain just starts going all these different directions. And I just had a moment where I was transported into a campsite. Maybe by a little river, maybe not by a little river. It's early morning, kind of brunchish, maybe like 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Why? Because that's the time to have a beer, or?
Well, I'm getting there. Not to elongate it too far, but you know, you got a little bit of a miss. You're waking up, because camping, when you're out camping or for tailgating, time frame goes out the window. You know, any kind of rules about when to have a beer, when to have certain foods is totally obliterated. Uh-huh. And so I picture myself by the warm campfire, 9:30, 10 in the morning, tents in the background, my sweatshirt, haven't showered yet, with a hot bowl of clam chowder.
Oh, yeah.
Creamy, potatoey, little dash of Tabasco. So we do get a little bit of spice and heat paired with this beer, sitting by a little bit of a burbling brook. And I think that's a great getaway. That's a nice relaxation. Come, you know, sit down and enjoy yourself, but also reflect a little bit with a great beer and a little bit of warm soup.
And I was actually generally I put pepper in though, and not Tabasco. So I'll put some black pepper in my clam chowder. But and maybe you do both. I mean, maybe pepper is just the natural standby.
I think it is.
Okay, so coming from the Midwest, where pepper is an exotic spice, you know, we added in. But when you were going down that road, and all of a sudden I'm starting to think too, you know, the Thai curry thing that I was just thinking about, Thai peanut sauce.
Ooh.
So you've
that
got this
really would pull the nuttiness out of this beer.
And just the tiny bit of sweetness that you get mm-hmm. out of a peanut.
I like that.
You know, this nice roasted peanut. So there's
when we go back to the clam chowder, you can't forget the oyster crackers.
Oh yeah,
because that little pinch of salt, iodized salt on the top, to punch through some of the creaminess and to highlight the essence of the clam and a little bit of brininess. You don't want to lose out on that. I love my oyster crackers. Don't forget them.
It's a staple for anybody who has kids, because that's an easy snack to throw into a Ziploc bag.
But not paired, not oyster crackers with kids and this IPA. Let's
oh no,
be clear.
I'm not. I'm not necessarily saying that that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got to teach our kids to be responsible drinkers at some point.
Oh.
And the earlier you start, I think.
Should we put a little disclaimer in here that
we do not
Jason
condone,
Hendrick, the hungry man, does not necessarily follow.
We do not condone any sort of underage drinking at all.
No, we don't.
Unless, of course, you're in Europe and then it's okay for you to do it. And then fine. Go ahead. Do it.
Bang.
But we're kind of we can be backwards on that sometimes. So, you know, all of the traditional kinds of pairings of fried foods and all that kind of stuff. This is just, those are no brainers with a beer that has such a hop character, an alcohol character. It's going to cleanse your palate. It's going to get you ready for that next bite of whatever the savory goodness is that you're eating. The only thing about these beers, though, is at 6.5%, we're starting to get up into some alcohol strengths here. These beers become heavier and heavier. And so if you're eating, if you've just been served a giant tray of fish and chips or a big pizza, just know that you're going to end up being pretty full on that.
Every now and then, and we did in the last episode too, we like to talk about some more vegetarian or vegetable focused dishes as well. Obviously, salads are an easy vegetarian kind of focus. I think you could do this beer with a great summer or fall salad, but you'd want to be cautious. Because I do feel you can get a lot of good proteins and some fruit mixed in, but don't go with the spicier lettuce. Don't go with arugula, because there is enough of a radish, peppery, spicy complexity to this beer that I think it would really overpower and put an off-putting aftertaste in your mouth if you went with an arugula or radicchio. You know, the red radicchio for sure is going to, we've talked about that in the past, you know, being the base for chicory. You don't want those bitter coffee notes or residual aspirin-y kind of flavors. Go with a more butter lettuce kind of focus, or even a crisp wedge with a good creamy blue cheese dressing, some bacon bits and tomato. It's a classic salad. Make sure you're not resonating too much with the spiciness of this American IPA.
So then, just after you get done saying that, I'm going to come at you with this one right here.
Here comes my
1-2 punch. So you end up doing frise, which is a bitter green, which is also, because we talked about this last week, is also part of the radicchio family, which is chicory and everything else. So I was like, okay, say I'm more in tune with the tops, and you're more in tune with the bottoms, evidently, when it comes to the,
whoa there, Cal.
whatever happened. So anyway, a frise salad, but so that's bitterness. It has a bitter green, but then throwing in some ruby red grapefruit. And so
citrus bite.
Yeah, you have got the citrus bite. It's almost like that salad is an IPA.
I'm open to that with a little bit of maybe honey mustard drizzle
to bring in some really cheese. A real light, and we make our own vinaigrettes, and so you know they're really easy to make. You a little bit of oil, a little bit of balsamic and mustard and pepper and all that, you know, whatever you put in there. So just a really light coating of it, a drizzle on top, tossed. The salad itself is almost an IPA, but then because of the bitterness, you have the resonating layers of bitterness between the beer and the salad, and then you also have the sweetness that comes, the underlying sweetness that's in a ruby red grapefruit. You know, yeah, it's bitter, but there's also a sweetness in it. That's what makes them so popular. And you look at this beer. This is everything that the beer is. You've got a sweetness, you've got the bitterness, and everything kind of flows together. And okay. I love finding vegetarian or salad pairings as well.
So we have salad in a glass and IPA on a plate. Is that kind of the direction we're going?
I like that idea. I do. I think that
I'm open
the world
to
would be
it.
A happier place.
I'm looking
place
forward to my invitation when you're going to be doing the salad with fresh vinaigrette, and I would be open to tasting it. I can't guarantee I'm going to like the pairing.
So,
but I'm open to it.
So here's the caveat with that one as well, is that
here comes the fine print.
Right, the fine print. And the lawyer speak. What I want to say is this one, not necessarily this beer, and for the reasons that you were talking about, that there's already the radish kind of ginger spices in it. But there are plenty of IPAs that are all grapefruit. All citrus fruits,
right.
and don't have the piney or the earthy sorts of spices that you would find on the backside. So make sure that you taste it. I'm not saying that that's
do
necessary
for this.
Do you
know the hops that are in this particular beer?
How many?
No, which style? Which variety?
Oh no, I don't. No.
We should look that up because I'd be curious. This is a distinctness. This is some unique flavor notes that I have not, at least in this combination, not been exposed to before. I'm really excited about this beer. I'm going to try to track some down.
All right, I'll see if I can't figure that out. I'm not going back to South Dakota anytime soon. But the next
you do
time
know
I
people.
Do, yeah.
The have your time, people call my people.
The next time I do, I will bring back some, certainly. So this has been episode IPA, American IPAs.
Yep. The subcategory. BJCP category 14B.
That's right. We have one more true BJCP category to go through, the double IPA.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Stay tuned to see what that's all about.
That is how excited I am about double IPAs. But then I've got, just because that's not enough, I've got...
You created two more.
I've got a black IPA for us to do too as well. But that's for another show. And make sure that you go to our hopheadsaid.com and look for the Pints and Pairings page. And you can find all the links. Whenever we release an episode, we end up putting food pairing suggestions, style guidelines, our own little whatever comments. We also have the YouTube videos there as well, so you can watch to see what it looks like here inside the Lauderton Studios, Hophead said. And
I'd say whatever method you use to communicate, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, YouTube, website, we've got it. We're there for you.
I think we've got it covered. So make sure that you go to everybodyshungry.org to find Jason and all his contact information. And, of course, Hophead said for me. And iTunes is probably the most popular place to find the podcast. But you can also go to a place called Podcast Pickle.
Every time you say it makes me chuckle.
And find us over there or YouTube. And make sure you like us and love us and click the thumbs up. And
tell your friends, because the more viewers and more followers we have, the more cool pairings we have exposure to. We're not experts, but we love to get some feedback about what you're eating, what you're drinking together.
Well, and then maybe we can even, with more viewers and more listeners and all that kind of stuff, we might even be able to track down a lucrative sponsorship deal. Who knows? That'd be nice.
We'll just keep drinking beer and see what happens.
Okay, well, let's just drink beer. All right, so as always, we want to remind you to eat, drink, and be hoppy. Not happy. Hoppy, like I said last time.
And if you're hoppy, you're probably going to be happy. Absolutely. You're Curtis Taylor, the Hophead said, and I am Jason Hendrick, the Hungry Man from Everybody's Hungry, and this has been Pints and Pairings.
We'll catch you on the next pour.
Cheers.